And it's time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. It's a discussion segment about things happening on and in the media. And in a world of both mass and very personalized media, there's always lots to talk about. We do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from social media to books. I'm going to stop saying the word media now. Our regular guests are here. Christopher Lucas from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And Victoria Sama, the journalism chair at Humboldt State University. Welcome back to you.
Thank you, and good morning.
Okay, social media can't seem to stay out of the news. We've skipped it for a couple of months now, but Facebook made it impossible to skip this time with the research that indicates that social media can hurt younger users. The information from the whistleblower that its own research confirms it. The pushback from Facebook saying, no, we've taken steps to curb any evils here. But you got members of Congress not only calling them in to testify, but also talking about regulation. And then, of course, the mysterious 8 hours or so outage of Facebook and its various components, right around the time all the news was hitting its peak. Chris Lucas, it's a real wealth of information here. So what's the overall take you're left with?
Oh, my. Well, certainly a very, very rough week for Facebook. Zuckerberg definitely put on the defensive, although when somebody comes out and starts claiming they're not evil, we probably want to pay at least a little bit of attention to what's going on over there. I think, you know, it does. I have somewhat mixed feelings about it. I'm definitely somebody who has been, you know, I'm out there telling people you might want to take Facebook off your mobile device, along with whatever other social media you feel comfortable removing. But at the same time, I think we want to be careful. I've seen a lot of coverage in the media that kind of cuts to the chase and, frankly, I think overstates a little bit on what the whistleblower was claiming and what that research was saying out of Facebook. The actual, you know, the chain of causality here is pretty tricky to tease out when we're talking about social media and just media impacts in general on people. And the impact on youth has been a decades-long concern, going back, you know, to the days of, you know, early radio, then television, and comic books, and everything else we could think of. And I really like to try and take a wider lens and acknowledge, you know, Facebook is the face of a lot of different problems that way go even way beyond this subject. But this is a commercial business, right? They are largely supported when we're talking about this address to the impact on teens by a $500 million beauty industry and a weight loss industry that's growing and getting close to that. And so I think, you know, the role of advertisers and who's creating the content, which, by the way, would include influencers, these young people who are creating content but largely supported by advertising dollars. You know, these are the folks who are making the media that is reaching those young people. And this, you know, we've had advertiser-supported media putting these messages before all of us, including the youth, for a long time, and have had a long struggle to try to mitigate the effects.
All right. Vicky Sama, why don't you weigh in here about your take on the general issue with Facebook and social media more broadly of late?
That's right. This isn't the first time that Facebook has come under the microscope. And this recent story now is based basically on these leaked thousands of pages of internal research documents that the whistleblower Francis Haugen, who testified before Congress this week that Instagram leads teenagers to eating disorders and worsens their thoughts about suicide. And she, leaked lots of internal documents. By the way, she left the job in May, and part of her job was to, control misinformation at Facebook and its other outlets like Instagram. And she reviewed research showed that British teenagers said they had more suicidal thoughts after using Instagram, and some of the teenage girls who were surveyed said that their eating disorders got worse after using Instagram. And we've seen this sort of uses and gratifications type of phenomenon in media usage and messaging and the results. And you know, there have been lots of different arguments whether or not, that kind of situation or characteristic must be present already in the individual before it actually appears in the individual, so that the media message doesn't necessarily create it, but maybe reinforces it. There's lots of theory out there that can argue both ways. And so this is a, you know, another fascinating commentary on social media impacts, and especially on younger minds that are not necessarily honed into critical thinking and able to question the images they see. And especially with teenagers, we've seen a lot of stories about especially teenage girls being pressured to expose themselves over social media like Snapchat and these other sort of ephemeral type of social media apps, where they're asked to show body parts and things like that to, you know, the boys, and they want to feel a sense of acceptance. And so they go along and play along with these kinds of things. And those things can be harmful. And, you know, parents are struggling with how to deal with this, and schools are also struggling with how to deal with this. And Haugen herself, when she was testifying in front of the Senate subcommittee, said that, you know, the Congress needs to take a more of a role. And she suggested that Congress raised the age usage for Facebook from, I think it's, you have to be 16, and she said it should be raised to maybe 18 or older for people to be able to use the social media outlets. So that was sort of one of her suggestions.
What do either of you think about the prospects for regulation, though? Because for one thing, it's pretty clear to me when members of Congress talk to the people from social media companies, they don't fully get what's going on here. The fact that that this is not like regulating the television industry, where you've got the content created by individuals all over the place instead of program producers. Aside from the fact that regulation has become a dirty word, I was just looking at who owns the most TV stations, Nexstar. Now, Grant, we grew up in a world where you could own 7 TV stations. Now, Nexstar owns 197. So the prospects for meaningful regulation, Vicki, what do you think?
Well, you know, this is going to be challenged. So I think when you have, well, first of all, Facebook is a private company, right? And so you're talking about the government trying to regulate private entities, what kind of precedent that might set. You know, the internet has always been a free-flowing form of engagement and communication, and so any attempts so far have really failed because there's just not been anybody who's been able to see where this could happen, where there can be some kind of regulation. So they have to work together and see if they can put some kind of restraint on speech without restraining it too much. Obviously, any kind of regulations will also impact the bottom line for companies like Facebook. So that's going to be a big challenge, and I think that's why there has been so many hearings and struggles within Congress on figuring out how to handle this.
Chris, what do you think? Prospects for regulation?
I think one of the most interesting aspects of this recent story with the whistleblower, and even really going back into earlier this year, has been what feels like a bit of a sea change around this conversation. I think for a long time, people were saying, you know, this is just we're in a deregulatory era. There's not much we can do here. But I don't know, I'm seeing a lot more discussion of possible solutions. They tend to be a little more, I think, platform agnostic, not specifically about Facebook, but Facebook often ends up leading the conversation because they're such a dominant player in this market, of course. But there are a lot of different platforms. You're hearing a lot more discussion about things like antitrust, suggestions on ways to do more content moderation, perhaps going to some kind of third-party content moderation that will try to avoid the issues this raises around the free speech, of course, perhaps solutions that would use revenue. These are extremely rich companies that these amount of having them, forcing them to use their revenue to fund some internal solutions on filtering. Another one I'd heard was about intervening at the level of how advertising is targeted on these platforms, which is in many ways their secret sauce, right? The ability to micro-target individuals, which really I think plays into this question of the potential harms of the platforms when they can really, you know, they really know our innermost thoughts in a lot of ways, so they can target us based on that information, and people realizing now just how much power that entails. The Jeffrey, you mentioned the, you know, legacy media, and of course we had the FCC that was keeping an eye on the industry of radio and television. Mm-hmm. And many people have thought, well, there's no way we could have an FCC of the internet, but you know, my sense is we're going to have to start having conversations like that.
Well, we will talk about the regulation certainly more down the road. This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange. Chris Lucas from Southern Oregon University, Victoria Sama from Humboldt State University. You can join in at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Okay, let's go a little lighter and so limber up a little bit. We'll spend about 20 seconds getting into a dance. All right, Vicky Sama. What's happening here?
I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. This is contagious.
And you can carry a tune, too. Great.
Oh, I try. This phenomenon started on TikTok this summer, and it has just proliferated all for all social media. I'm seeing it all over my Instagram. And if you haven't seen it yet, folks, this is a dance craze exploding. And it's just ordinary people on the street. They break out into dance to this song, which was made famous in the 2005 movie Madagascar. And in that animated movie, there's a dance sequence with the lion, and people are doing the imitation of the lion dance. And so now we are seeing this as just a really happy, sort of benign, viral video that goes on. It reminds me a lot of that, remember Gangnam Style?
Oh, yeah, whoop a Gangnam Style, yeah.
Gangnam Style, yeah, the singer, the Korean singer Psy, which was short for Psycho, and you know, he got a lot of hits on that one, and that was a dance craze that went viral as well. And you know, it says a lot about these videos, how easy it is to just have something so simple, light, and fun that can, you know, propel an ordinary person into a movie star overnight. And so this I like to move it is really spreading, and it's just got, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands and millions of viewers. It's just exploding all over. And it says something, I think, a little about, you know, why viral videos are so important. And I think about the why factor on this one. And, you know, it's maybe sharing some emotions that viewers have with each other and not knowing anything else about a person, but some commonality. Music seems to be able to bring that people together and dance, right? And or maybe it's some kind of cultural connection. You know, there's a lot of different theories about how people connect using social media, and this kind of brings me back to Marshall McLuhan, who in his 1964 book Understanding Media, you know, had the notion that the medium themselves were the message, right? Mm-hmm. Using the phones now, he was talking about television in the day and how TV was, you know, transmitting this light and this, you know, messages that was really the message itself. And now we're seeing phones are really taking that kind of place if you follow McLuhan's kind of theory. But, yeah, it's just a really interesting phenomenon, and I'm hooked. I could say I've definitely got the virus.
It's an easy dance to learn, too, and there's nothing offensive about it, no pelvic thrusting or anything else that might turn off a few older people or something. But you know, it's really light and bouncy and fun. And so, Chris Lucas, have you been doing it in your office?
I must say, I took TikTok off my phone. It was so, it's one of these sites that is very, as they say in the business, sticky. It, you know, once you start watching, it's hard to stop watching. It's very popular in my household. I have kids, and my wife also loves to watch these videos and see the songs. And I think it really, to me, what TikTok is exemplifying is the sort of playfulness, right? The playful potentials of the internet and the kind of the value of low stakes fun for people who want to just record themselves and place music behind that video or do some of the other really cool functions that TikTok has, which is like duetting with other people or just doing reaction videos. And this stuff goes viral all the time. And, we're into probably a couple years into this now where viral memes pop up so quickly on TikTok, you know, built around some little challenge like a dance move like that. And there's been a bunch of them. I think back to like the sea shanty moment, right, earlier this year.
Yes.
Some of them, I must say, have gone a little dark, right? Some of them have led to acts of violence or like that milk crate challenge that people got injured trying to do. And TikTok has started to intervene and try to actually tamp down or diminish the impact of some of those viral moves. And I know it's just fascinating how how preoccupied we are by all of this.
It's interesting, too, though, that when you mentioned the sense of fun, both of you, the idea that TikTok, I think, has come across now as the place you go for the fun stuff. And I certainly know people in my own close circle who will spend days, if not weeks, not going to Facebook and dealing with the various accusations and countercharges and pictures of people's food. But they'll go to TikTok every single day, sometimes several times a day. So, I mean, it's certainly different slices of the social media market that are taking on by different entities. Vicky, what do you think?
I agree. I think it's very contagious, which is why they call it viral media, viral videos. And it's light, and it does give you a break from the sort of the serious, very, downward spirals that we see on social media. There's a lot of negative media out there and a lot of negative messaging. So this is kind of light, and it is, I think music itself and dance, I think, the baby videos, there's people who, peel bananas and do simple little ordinary things, and they become stars overnight just because they did them in a funny, humorous way. And then this thing gets, shared over and over and over, and it bleeds over into other media. So TikToks get shared on Instagram and on Twitter now. So, everything is mutating, right? And so we don't miss any of these. But I agree, it's a nice light, a nice avenue, and it's got a niche.
This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange.
Go ahead, Chris. To think about is whether is it actually social media, right? I think, to my mind, TikTok is maybe less of a form of social media than it's almost like mass media, actually, because when you look at how people interact with each other on the platform, you don't seem to be looking for friends or friendship or like exchanges in that way. I think they're more like building an audience. Mm-hmm. They're demonstrating talents. The goal of that platform is to, build followers and go viral, frankly. So, and there's various reasons for doing that. You can, try to elevate your career. There's a lot of stars on TikTok now. A lot of brands are moving to TikTok. And it seems like a qualitative difference to me between what we've traditionally thought of social media, which was about, that network of a lot of people in real life and some people you don't, but the kinds of exchanges you do seem different than I've seen on a lot of TikTok. It's I sometimes draw a connection. I think of it as like vaudeville, internet age. It's all this talent that is in our towns and communities and so forth, but on a global scale, doing a lot of comedy, a lot of singing, a lot of entertainment.
All right. Yeah, fair point that you don't get a lot of back and forth on TikTok as you do on the other social media, so that's not part of that. This is Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange with Chris Lucas from Southern Oregon University and Vicky Sama from Humboldt State University. I want to touch on movies briefly because we're getting short on time here, and so we'll go straight to beyond the fact that movies are definitely back when you have Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings earning up to $214 million as of a couple of days ago, but specifically to the new James Bond movie, which is the last Daniel Craig movie. There's a new 007 in the movie because Daniel Craig's James Bond gets renumbered. 007 is a black woman, and Vicky Sama, this is a big difference for a Bond movie.
This is a great departure from the Bond brand, and this is the first time that a Bond movie has named a Agent 007 as a female, a black female, and the star of the latest Bond movie, No Time to Die, in that role is Lashana Lynch. She's a British actress, and this movie had been in the making for many years. So it had come started out in like 2000 since the 2015 Spectre series or the Spectre movie came out. It's been a long time running, and then there were many delays in getting this movie released. But it was a real breath of fresh air to see this. And what's going to happen in the next? The next iterations of Bond movies, I think this is really an open door to allow the movie to explore more change for the characters.
All right, Chris, what do you think about the changes in the Bond franchise over time, particularly this one where they're getting people of color,
yeah,
and women represented as something other than the quote-unquote Bond girls?
Yeah, welcome development. You know, I think, Bond especially, which I think for many people has been one of those franchises or one of those series that we've looked at has been pretty retrograde in a lot of ways. And so clearly they're attempting to push against that. Barbara Broccoli, who sort of runs that, the long-standing Broccoli family who owns that intellectual property, has said that there will be no female Bond as long as she's in charge. But I know a lot of actors under consideration for the next Bond are actors of color, which is seems like they're leaving the sort of setting that up in a way, which may be, the direction they go. This is really part of this much larger conversation going on in Hollywood around equity and representation. And I'm just really glad to get to this particular piece of storytelling.
I can't fit a pick three in here, so I'll give you just give me one media choice, and you can email me the other two, and I'll put them up on the web. So, Chris Lucas, your pick one for the month.
All right. Well, I'll just encourage people to go to the Ashland Independent Film Festival website. They're starting tomorrow screening Storm Lake, which is a really great award-winning documentary from this year about a small-time newspaper that's trying to survive in rural Iowa. And the film festival is showing it virtually, as they've been doing for the last year through their website.
Okay. And Vicky, your pick one?
I'm going to give you two. Indigenous Peoples Day, hashtag Indigenous Peoples Day, mm-hmm, in honor of Indigenous Peoples Day this week. And The Last Duel, new movie by director Scott Ridley, with Adam Driver, Matt Damon, Nicole Holofcener. True story set in 14th century France about a lady raped by a knight. And in medieval Europe, rape wasn't considered a crime against a woman, but a crime against the man. So, yeah.
Okay, great. And so send me your other stuff, because we didn't get to flesh out the full pick three for this month. Chris Lucas from the Southern Oregon University Communication Faculty, Vicky Sama from the Journalism Chair at Humboldt State University. Thank you both again for Signals and Noise.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you.